Okay, folks, thank you very much indeed for joining us here today. This is, of course, Planet Porky, Life On. I am the Porkmeister, and with me today, once again, delighted to say, Leslie Ann Jones. Leslie Ann, how are you, my dear?
I'm fine, thank you. It's lovely to be back.
I have to say that we've had a few ribald remarks about one or two things that you mentioned in the last Planet Porky podcast, in particular. Your examinations, or should I say observations, about the anatomy of men. I have to say, you know, a few people made a few comments about that one.
Well, they will, won't they? Because people are, you know, what can I say? Yes, they'll always reach for the lowest common denominator.
Yes.
I can't make excuses for our listeners.
No, but and of course, you were only saying it like you saw it, so to speak.
Which I always do.
Anyway, just to remind you folks that if at any time you want to get in touch, you want to tell us what you're thinking, how it's going, then, of course, you can get in touch by getting hold of planetporkypod@gmail.com. Send us a note or two on there and we'll be delighted to respond. Now, talking about all things in relations between men and women, Leslie, I'm going to show you a picture now, OK? And for the benefit of our listeners, this picture is a picture of a man who has been a hero to me all my life, Don McLean, American Pie, OK? And bye-bye, Mr. American Pie. Drove my Chevy to the levee, but the levee was dry. And all good boys were drinking whiskey and rye. Singing, this will be the day that I die. Now, the reason I'm singing that like that is that Don McLean is now 74 years of age, OK? But he's had some sort of crisis in his life because his girlfriend now is the most absurdly beautiful former Playboy centrefold who is, get this, 49 years younger than Don McLean. I want you to look at this picture, please, and describe it to the listeners, please.
Okay, it's a very buxom brunette.
I mean, massively buxom.
Hugely buxom. Mm. Eye-wateringly so. She's in a minuscule bikini, a sort of stars and stripes bra top, and a tiny, tiny pair of white panties.
Yes, that's right.
Yeah, she's worked out, hasn't she?
Okay, so that's fine. Is this woman not literally stripping herself of all her dignity? Is she not shaming herself? Is she not bashing holes in any credibility she ever had by simply swanning around in clothes like that?
She's not swanning around. Is she standing by a swimming pool?
Hang on.
She's posing for the camera.
But she's the paramour of Don McLean.
Yes, sir.
One of the most famous living singer-songwriters.
Yeah.
And she's 49 years younger than him.
And your point is?
My point is that I think it's disgraceful. That I think Don McLean is disgraceful for wanting to knock around with ladies in their 20s.
Oh, darling, he ain't the first.
Hey,
come on, he ain't the first.
Of course he's not the first, but, you know, for goodness sake.
Well, what exactly has offended you about that?
Well,
it's quite common, isn't it?
What's offended me is that she should be in a relationship with somebody round about her own age to get the maximum out of life that people in their 20s can.
Okay.
Not knocking around with a bloke who's, you know, not far short of 80.
Okay, so one of your best mates is Rod Stewart. He's traded them in for newer models every few years for as long as we can remember. Yeah. His current wife is only in her 40s.
Yeah.
And he's well into his 70s.
Yeah, look.
What's the difference?
The difference is this. Rod has never had a permanent relationship with a woman 49 years younger. Rod has always been absolutely straightforward in his relationships to his previous wives. They've had children. He looks after them as a great father.
Well, they all look the same. Every single wife that he's traded the next one in for, they're all a mirror image of each other.
That's because he likes blondes. And by the way, he's retired from all that, right? He retired from all that some good 12 years ago when he met Penny, 12 or 15 years ago, when he was still in his late 50s, okay, or very early 60s. Now a devoted family man again. Got two teenage lads who I've met, by the way.
He's got eight children.
He's got 8 children altogether, and he looks after them all, tried to get them all together for Christmas down in
Florida. I saw that picture,
Florida.
Yeah,
that's right, yeah. And is a devoted father, but, you know...
Don't get me wrong, I love him. Absolutely love Rod to death. But where is the difference here?
You wouldn't see Penny, the mother of his 2 children, and a woman who's, you know, very straightforward in life, who prefers, actually, to give her time over to training to be a special policewoman, okay? She wants to be she's training as a special constable policewoman. You wouldn't see Penny posing around in the skimpiest of bikinis.
Yeah, but you have done. I've seen pictures of Penny.
Not
playing devil's advocate here,
Rod
of course.
Since she's been Rod Stewart's wife.
Well, okay.
Since
so
she's
is
been
this,
mother to the
she's
two
not
children.
His wife yet, right?
No,
she hasn't married Don McLean yet.
I don't know. I mean, is it just me? It could just
I
be
think
me.
You're showing your age, Michael. I think that we mustn't be judgmental. Mm-hmm. What I would say is that if the tables were turned, if the woman were in her 70s and the guy were only in his 20s, then there would be an outrage.
Yeah, well...
And that's not fair.
Well, you know, that sort of thing has happened in the past. Now, also, of course, another very famous man. Isn't it amazing how a lot of these people go to St. Bart's at this time of the year?
Because it's hot.
Have you been to St. Bart's?
Yes,
Holland?
I have. It's hot. It's rich people. It's very rich. On extended New Year's holidays and frolicking in the sea.
It's a former French colony.
Yeah.
So it's got great French influence. That is where I actually was the last person ever to interview Rudolf Nureyev before he died of AIDS.
Oh, cool.
He was flown back to his home in St. Bartholomew, via St. Martin's, which is another French island, OK? And I climbed over the wall and got into his villa.
Is that a euphemism?
No, not at all, not at all. He was on his deathbed. And he was...
So what did he say?
Like that. Oh, loads. But he was, you know, he was in a sort of coma, like that, you know. But at least I got in there because I was...
How did you get in? Were you not stopped by security?
No, I climbed over the wall and I walked across the garden and the door windows to his bedroom were open and the curtains were flapping around. I walked in and he was lying there on his bed. There's nobody else in the room. And as far as I'm concerned, I'd been invited in. He didn't tell me to leave.
Well, that's like Taverner's last ever interview with Peter Sellers at the Dorchester.
I was with him.
Just wandered up in the lift.
No, it was at the Middlesex Hospital.
Oh, I thought it was at the Dorchester.
No, we went to the Middlesex Hospital and dressed as doctors.
It gets worse.
Yeah.
And you dressed up as doctors.
On. Yeah.
Yeah, it's
got
shameful, isn't it?
Got up on the floor.
I did all that.
Peter
I remember
Sellers
dressing
was.
Up as a nurse a few times.
I know. But
it was all a bit end of pier in those days, wasn't it?
Well, it was.
But it did work.
Wouldn't you know? Anyway, look, I contrast that with Leonardo DiCaprio.
DiCaprio.
Now, he's 45. They're on St. Bart's, right? Like a load of other people.
Oh, and he's got a 20-something bird. He's got
well,
his hand on a bum, hasn't he?
I was about to say. So he's 45, but, you know, he looks a good 45.
He's got a belly on him.
Well, his model girlfriend is 22.
Yeah.
Her name is Camilla Morone, okay? It's an unfortunate name, isn't it? It's spelled like moron, but it's, it's Morone.
Like Hyacinth Bouquet.
Yeah, that's right, it is, yeah. Camilla has defended their age gap. She told the LA Times, there are so many relationships in Hollywood and in the history of the world where people have large age gaps. I just think anyone should be able to date whoever they want. But, I mean, there's only a 20-year age difference there.
Only 20 years. Yeah, but look, if he were a bus driver aged 49 or whatever he is and she's 22, would she find him attractive? If they were not frolicking on the sands in St. Bart's, but if they were walking along the pier, which no longer exists, in Margate, would that have quite the same allure?
Yeah, but you see, the way I'd always defend that with people like, older men and younger women is that what the younger women see in the older man is,
Money, love.
Yes, money, certainly. But if he's famous and he's rich, then he's famous and rich for a reason. And that is because he's got more about him than most people. Do you see what I mean? Richard Branson, billionaire, highly attractive man. You know, women have been throwing themselves at him for years, air hostesses and all that kind of stuff, you know. And that's because he's a very clever bloke. And so people, you know, are attracted to clever, intelligent, successful people.
Alpha males.
Yeah.
There is something about alpha males, and I've fallen for some in my time. But,
exactly.
But, you know, they tend to be damaged in other ways. There tend to be flaws.
Damaged?
Yes, and there tend to be things that, in the end, a woman of any intelligence and self-worth cannot live with.
Well, you say that, and that might be why so many of them have wives. Normally speaking, in a celebrity relationship, the problem is jealousy between the two careers, isn't it? You know,
yeah, that happens a lot. And I had that with Paul McCartney when I was working on the book with Linda McCartney.
Yeah, that's right.
In the end, never went ahead.
You told me.
Because he didn't want the competition. I absolutely adore him.
Yeah.
But I did feel sad that she didn't get to tell her story.
Yeah.
Primarily because it was a great title and it would have sold.
Funny you should say that, but and I know you're in the course of writing a book about John Lennon, which must be coming to fruition.
I'm getting that, almost there.
Yeah, I was going to say.
It's been the hardest book I've ever written, I have to say.
Well, I bet it is, because although John Lennon will still be talked about in 100 years' time, there's been an awful lot written about John Lennon over the past 40 years, and you're now writing another one. But I don't know if you are aware, you probably are, our mutual friend David Wigg is very well known to you.
Yes.
Did you know that Wiggy did a series of radio interviews?
Oh, of course, yeah. Famously.
And they have never been published until today.
Well, that's not strictly true.
Well,
They've been available for some years.
Funny enough, as we do this today in this studio here in London at Spectrum Studios, and it's completely contemporary to people listening to it right now, for the first time, I've seen an account of the David Wigg interviews with the four Beatles, which apparently, according to the piece I read...
In the Daily Mail today.
That's right. Ringo Starr and George Harrison both got lawyers in to prevent the interview ever going out. Is that right?
Could be. I mean, David's been very cagey about it.
Right.
Because I approached him to talk to him for my book.
Right.
And he didn't want to say anything. And I imagine that all this legal stuff was going on at the time.
Yeah.
But those interviews have been available for some years.
Right.
Now, there must have been some kind of dispute going down with the BBC.
Yeah.
Because he recorded them for the BBC.
Right.
I don't think they were broadcast at the time
recorded. They've never been broadcast,
but you
apparently
can buy them. You can buy copies of them.
Oh, I see.
On Amazon.
Yeah.
Interested me that the piece today wasn't written by David, because David is, of course, a journalist.
That's right.
Some other guy wrote
it. I think his name was Guy.
Yeah, whoever it was. But why? Yeah. Why would David not take the opportunity to write his own piece about his own experience?
I don't know. Maybe
he's not slow in coming forward, as a rule.
No, he's not. They're not. Maybe they're about to be published, or maybe they're about to be released or something like that. I don't know. You know, I'm not sure. But, I mean, in 100 years' time, people will still be finding out new things about the Beatles and about John Lennon, just like as now people write books about Winston Churchill and are finding new things out. I mean, that is the essence of a great author, isn't it? To find yet more new
information.
There's
always new stuff. It's like a couple of people have said to me, why are you writing about John Lennon? Mm. You never met him.
Yeah.
I said, well, look, okay, what about all the authors that write books about Shakespeare?
Yes,
they never met
him. Exactly.
What about Claire Tomlin's amazing books on Charles Dickens? She never met him.
I totally agree. About once a year, I wander around Waterstones and find a new book about Horatio Admiral Lord Nelson, who I adore, because living down in Portsmouth, the HMS Victory is just below my balcony, and it's, you know, the home of the British Navy ever since the famous victory at Trafalgar. And every time I buy a new book on him, I find something new out about him. You know, you can do it. Great researchers like yourself can do it.
Thank you. But great stories will always be told.
Yes.
And it's about storytelling primarily.
Yes.
And it's telling the story again for a new audience.
Yes, that's true. Now, getting back, and I'm glad we wandered onto that subject of our heroes like the Beatles and Lord Nelson. Getting back to Simbart, I find another group of people there who I regard really as a bunch of bums are the family of, what's her name? Kate Middleton.
Oh, dear.
Now, Kate Middleton, I regard as top person. I think she's a future queen, and she acts like one, and she's brilliant. She is, of course, married to William. She's the Duchess of Sussex, isn't she? Or Cambridge. Duchess of Cambridge,
she's exemplary.
Yeah, she's exemplary. But
she has her neckline sewed up. Did you read that story this week?
No.
About when she buys new designer frocks and stuff, and they might have a little bit of cleavage showing or a split up the hemline or something. She has them stitched up so that she doesn't show too much.
Queen-like behaviour. However, she's got a sister, Pippa, who was in the papers this week for being in St. Bart's, and that's all.
The world's most famous bottom. Do you remember the bridesmaid's dress?
Yeah, that's right. Apparently, her husband...
James. Is it James or is he the brother?
No, James is the brother.
Or are they both James?
I don't know.
Everybody's James.
Her husband, right, who was Spencer Matthews?
It doesn't ring a bell, but anyway.
Hang on. Anyway, they're all staying at somewhere called Eden Rock Hotel, owned by 31-year-old made-in-Chelsea star Spencer Matthews's brother, which is Pippa's husband, James.
Husband's guinea pigs, right. Dogs, brothers.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. So James is Pippa's husband, the hanger-on son of this great family who own this Eden Rock Hotel. But the other one, the one who's the real bum of the family, is James Middleton, who's age 32, who's there with his girlfriend, Elise Thevenet.
She looks pretty hot in the pictures.
Well, you've seen the pictures of her. I mean, you know, she's another sort of person you'd see in St. Bart. I totally agree with that.
They're kind of interchangeable, these women, aren't they?
Yeah.
In designer bikinis that cost £400 that disintegrate great the first time they go in the sea.
But if I was an editor and my picture editor came in one, I said, right, what have we got today? He said, oh, this is great. I've got some great pictures of the Middleton family. I'd say, I've been there. That's the filing cabinet for pictures of the Middleton family.
I agree.
Who the bloody hell wants to see pictures of the Middleton family?
Not me. Do you remember the wedding, right?
Yeah.
And all the fuss that was made about the mother.
Yes.
Kate's mother in the powder blue outfit.
Yes.
And she'd gone on the Doucan diet. Do you remember? The Doucan diet became the big thing that everybody jumped on the bandwagon.
Yeah.
And the guy was struck off in the end for malpractice.
Oh, really?
He was an actual French doctor.
I didn't know that.
Publishers made millions. One of my publishers, actually.
Yeah. Yeah.
Made millions out of the sales of that book.
But
he was discredited. But it was all about the mother.
What's her name again? Her first
Carol.
Name? Carol Middleton.
Carol, the mother of the future queen. Who cares?
Exactly. She was in the papers a few days ago. Again, on a beach in St. Bart's, and everybody falling over themselves saying, what a great figure for a woman aged 60. No, actually, she had the figure of a woman aged 60.
Yes, she did.
You could tell.
Yeah.
You know,
the belly was there, wasn't it?
Yes, exactly.
But we should all have a belly at the age of 60.
Of course we should.
Especially someone who's had three kids.
I mean, the most overrated family in the world.
I mean,
Pippa, from what I can see, hasn't got a career or anything. She just got married.
Oh, she used to write the Waitrose food magazine or something.
Yeah,
We
said things like putting jam on toast is often a great solution for breakfast. I mean, it's as basic as that.
It didn't last long, did it?
No, of course it didn't.
But the thing is, they're accessible. They are. It's a bit like Ringo, you know.
Yes.
Ringo was the Beatle who was accessible.
Yes.
That we had a sort of way into the Beatles through Ringo.
Yes.
And the Middletons are our way into the royal family.
Yes.
A bit like a Meghan was supposed to be, only that backfired.
Yeah.
So we now are left with the Middletons.
Yeah, I see.
And we can kid ourselves that we're getting a little taste of the royals and how they live their lives by studying the Middletons. I agree.
Not for me. Now, let me put this to you. This is really, really interesting, and I'm sure it will have intrigued you as well. Sharon Stone is looking for a boyfriend online. What do we make of this? She put herself onto a dating site, and of course, it was so unusual to have Sharon Stone claiming to be the Hollywood actress on a dating site. They closed her down and blocked it because they thought she was a fake. Miss Stone, 61, said users reported her to the Bumble app. This is the website she was on, because they feared her account was fake and she was being taken advantage of. But she tweeted to ask Bumble, on which women users make the first contact, to reinstate her account. I went on the Bumble dating site and they closed my account, she said. Some users reported that it couldn't possibly be me. I sent them a note which said, hey, Bumble, is being me exclusionary? Don't shut me out of the hive. And the Golden Globe winner shared a picture of Bumble's message to her fans to prove it's her. Now, what do you make of that?
Well, okay. The more famous you are, the harder it is to get a genuine date. So in this world,
it's not, is it?
Yeah, well, it is, isn't it?
If you live in Santa Monica and you've got the whole of the Pacific Coast and
what kind of guys are you going to meet? They're married or gay, especially at the age of 61.
Are they?
Yes, they are.
Well, okay,
especially
who are you
there.
On a
well, you're going to have a broader canvas to paint
but
on.
You find some bum who works in a garage.
Maybe,
or something,
but
you know?
she likes firemen. I mean, yeah.
She was married to a journalist. He was the editor of the San Francisco Examiner, I think.
Yeah. Look, it's a hard age group to get a date in.
Yeah.
Being in your 60s.
Yeah.
You're famous as hell.
Yeah.
How else are you going to find a date? You're not going to wander into the bar at the Four Seasons.
Why not?
And pick some bloke up.
Why not?
Because he's there to pick up a 20-something to have a fling with while he's away from his wife.
Yeah, but I mean, surely, I mean, at 61, is she looking for a lifetime partner?
She may be. Or she might be lonely.
I mean, she could wander into the Beverly Hills Hotel, cocktail bar, obviously, Sharon Stone, meet an Iranian billionaire or a Lebanese billionaire.
She doesn't want a Lebanese billionaire.
Who's over here on business.
She wants...
Who could give her a great time, even though she's obviously not short of a few bob herself, you know.
And also, and guys of that kind of age group with all that kind of money don't want a woman in her 60s. They want somebody 25. Look at Don McLean.
Here's a picture of her in her 60s. She looks like a woman in her 40s.
Okay, she does.
She's Sharon Stone.
But that's a picture and that's airbrushed. Yeah. And, you know, Sharon Stone in the flesh.
I wouldn't deny her garage space to, you know,
what,
try
you'd
and be
go out
polite
with him.
About it.
Well, there you go. Look, join the website.
Yes, I would.
Sign up to the website.
Yeah,
make
yeah.
contact with her and see how it goes.
Now you've got me thinking. What you're saying is the Portmeister signs on the website, put a slightly dated picture of myself on.
No,
you know,
put a picture of you as you are now.
Beard,
looks
Auburn
pretty
hair,
good to me.
You know, my retro glasses and all that kind of stuff. And tell Sharon Stone that I am one of the most accomplished journalists in Britain, that I've recorded Rolling Stones record, Paint It Black. I've had a best-selling book, you know, there's an awful lot of bubbly in Brazil. I've sailed the Atlantic, I've flown Concorde. I could be the answer.
You could be her ideal man.
Could be the answer.
Do you know, give it a go. Why not?
All her problems. Right, OK, folks, you are listening to Life on Planet Porky, and I'm delighted, absolutely delighted, to say that with me in the studio today is Leslie Ann Jones. Now, Leslie Ann, your daughter will be going back to university very shortly. Is
that
right?
Yeah,
already
she is.
Gone?
Yeah, yeah, she's going this weekend.
Mm.
Yep.
I know, yeah. I spent a bit of time down in Bournemouth, by the way, over the festive season. We're not talking about the festive season, sorry. It's just a story.
We are so over the festive season.
And as I've probably mentioned before, my family run a student letting business, you know. And this is very hard work. On Boxing Day, I was out there getting the bins out from the backyards in all the properties they own because the bin man was coming the following day on the 27th. And of course, there's no students in those properties. So I literally spent 2 hours with my gloves on, right, around the property, dragging the bins out the back because these days it's such a complicated business collecting trash and refuse and recyclables. You have to have the right bin out the front of the house or else they won't collect it. So I had to go round, get this. So I had to go round and get all the blue bins out of the backyards, okay, all the properties. It took me about 2 hours, no joke, but I was happy to do it, my contribution to the family business, you know. And then came back and then we had Boxing Day lunch and all that. Then at 5 o'clock, a plaintive cry of despair, I'd been told the wrong colour bin to bring out. So at 6 o'clock on Boxing Day night,
in the dark.
Had to get the gloves back on.
Oh, no.
Had to hire a driver, because, of course, by then, you know, I'd been on the old slosh over lunch and all that kind of stuff, who had to take me round the said properties
again. Swap the bins over.
And, of course, it took longer
because
I had to put the blue bins back and get the black bins out. For the
Michael,
following
this
morning.
Is bad for you. You shouldn't be doing this kind
of
stuff.
Well, you know, it's...
Especially
it's
not in your condition.
Well, you know, the condition, I don't want to talk about it. I don't talk about my heart very much. There is a battle there to be fought. You're absolutely right. There's a battle there to be fought. But, you know, I don't like talking about it. Don't like talking about it. Now, what I was going to say is, as your daughter's going back, what I picked up on just recently was the flakiness of students these days in many different ways. The one that really hit me in the face was, get this, a snowflake mum has been ridiculed after advertising for a nanny to look after her daughter at university. The ad reveals the first-year Leeds University law student already has a driver of her own to ferry her around from home to her lectures and to pursue her social life. But it says the 18-year-old young lady, who's a Canadian, so she's come from Canada.
It's funny that Canadians do tend to come from Canada.
Yeah, yeah, that's right, yeah. But, I mean, she's studying this country. It's strange, that, because America's got some quite good universities,
yeah,
isn't it?
Yeah, you know. It does.
Needs help with her cooking, her laundry and her study schedule is very intense, and she won't have time to do any of this herself.
Well, OK, this is not the so-called snowflake's fault. This is a classic helicopter mother who cannot let her child go to university and be a student, where they have to do everything for themselves, make all their own mistakes, screw it all up, come home once a term and get knocked back into shape by mum or whoever they have to go back home to. But this is the mother's problem. This is not the so-called snowflake's problem.
Yeah.
Now, who in their right mind, unless they've got way too much money, which this woman obviously has, sends their child to university with a driver, which is going to make you the object of ridicule among all your fellow students?
Well, I'm not sure it is, because, do you know what?
Unless you're giving them all lifts.
Do you know what? Because I observe the student community. When I go to Bournemouth, right, and it's the main family business, student letting and all that. My sister and brother-in-law live away from the houses that they rent out, because the reason they got into it is they used to live on a housing estate next to Bournemouth Technical College, right? It was a technical college. It had about 1,600 students, okay? And so you hardly ever saw a student. It was so small. That is now a 16,000-strong university.
Is it? That's huge.
It went from technical college to polytechnic to university plus arts college, OK. The campus has spread. They have literally commandeered fields full of horses and built new lecture theatres. It's amazing, the spread of it, and that has created great demand for student places. So half of the houses on the estate that my sister used to live on are now let over to students.
And I'm sure they're very good quality and very well run. But I have to say that there is a scandal in this country about the standard, the quality of most student accommodation at universities. It is absolutely appalling. It costs a fortune. The places are ill-kept.
Well, you see,
they're dirty, they're poorly run. No, as I just said, I'm sure they're very nice and very well run.
I'm not just blowing the
trumpet. Both my son and my daughter live in shameful accommodation that costs more than 800 quid a month.
You see, I find that odd, because I was going to say to you at the start of this conversation, I think being a student has become a very middle-class pursuit now, because A, of the tuition fees, and B, you're absolutely right, the ancillary costs of being at university. All the students... Well, I told you, didn't I, that one of the students was Carol Decker's daughter. You know Carol Decker of Tapau? Her daughter, Sherry.
Wonderful voice, Carol Decker.
Yeah, absolutely. She was at the top for 5 weeks with China in My Hand.
Great song.
Yeah, it was. But her
daughter... She has perfect pitch, Carol.
Was she?
No, she does have perfect pitch. She is, and she does have.
Yeah, well, they're going on an 80s tour soon as well, because I...
they're always doing those. Rewind tours. They're pretty good.
I did Jeremy Vine with her recently. She's a
lovely
woman.
No, she's
so
gorgeous. I love her.
Her daughter stayed in one of my family's
houses. Good.
But the point I was going to make is that I don't think kids from working class backgrounds now can afford to go to university. The idea, Tony Blair, education, that should be open to everybody. I mean, we've only recently read about two top schools, Winchester and one of the others.
Dulwich College, where my son went.
Turning down a bursary.
Turning down a bursary
because poor white kids.
Because they were set specifically to benefit poor white boys.
Right.
Now, the college can't be seen to be getting into that kind of discrimination. It's a multicultural school.
Yes.
It reflects the streets on which it stands,
yes,
which is Southeast London,
yes, yes,
where the mix is very cosmopolitan,
yes,
as it should be. Mm. So we can't go discriminating against the other students by saying this is only for poor white kids.
Yeah, but I look at it the other way. It's not discriminating against other students. It is discriminating against the kids who could have a good education, but because of political correctness, have now been told they can't.
Well,
because it's absolutely true. What you might call, run-down, white trash-type estates or white trash-type parents, right, are not able to provide for their children in the way that families who started as immigrants two or three generations ago have come here, made great success of their lives, started businesses, worked hard, and put their children's education right at the front, and are, and you see it through universities now, the amount of, ethnic family achievements that have happened in this country.
Which is a great thing.
And so why can't we give a leg up to those kids
okay.
who are... actually victims of their parents' intransigence in their ability to give their children a good education.
There is a wider point to be made here, which is that to send one's child to a public school is not just about education.
Yes.
If you're a poor white boy living on an estate somewhere and you suddenly get the opportunity to go to a school like Winchester or Dulwich College...
Yes.
It's a social experience. It's not just about learning.
Yes,
so
I agree.
It's all about interacting with other families.
I agree.
It's all about the peripherals, the other parts of the school experience, which are nothing to do with education.
Yes.
You're not going to get invited on the holidays to St. Bart's with those other families. You're not going to get to go to the parties
and
do all the peripheral stuff because you are not socially like those other kids.
No, I totally agree with you. And shamefully, I read one account of one report which said it was actually parent power which led to these million-pound bursaries being turned down because the parents from pretty wealthy families whose kids are at Winchester don't want them mixing with poor white boys.
Well, there may be some of that, but you know, it is
a myth.
And it makes me very angry. Not every family who sends their child to a public school is loaded.
Oh, no.
A lot of people are going without.
I went to Drank Grammar, which was on the public school register. Mm-hmm. Because I got a free place paid for by Cheshire County Council. I couldn't have gone otherwise.
You've got state schools full of kids whose parents are changing their cars every year, who are having five holidays every year. And you've got kids at public schools whose parents are staying with the same car for 20 years, never going on holiday, so that they can afford the school fees.
Yep.
So it's mythology to say that all kids who go to public schools are rich people.
Yeah, absolutely. And talking about that, by the way, just before we get off this subject... another report I read, super rich parents in London's wealthiest areas are hiring ex-military bodyguards to nanny their children as protection against rising crime in the capital and even the threat of abduction. Former Special Forces soldiers are being paid up to £150,000 a year to become family protection officers.
Oh, there's okay.
What does that say about our modern
society?
Well,
we had a lot of this. So kids coming out of Dulwich College, obviously they go to this very posh-looking public school.
Yes.
They're going to have things on them like expensive laptops and expensive phones and all the other paraphernalia. So they were getting on the school buses outside of college.
Yeah.
And then the buses would pull up, so coaches to take them home, you know.
Yeah.
Coaches would pull up at traffic lights and they would be steamed. So at the traffic lights, the buses would be stormed by a bunch of thugs who would rush onto the bus, run around the bus, grabbing all the stuff, smacking a few guys around the head and leaping off.
That's absolutely disgrace.
And so, yes, they need protection officers.
What a damn disgrace. And just to finish on the student thing, by the way, I said to you, I think universities now getting overloaded because people can't afford to go there anymore and universities are falling out of sync. But get this one. Many graduates of UK universities will remember the seasonal scramble for a good spot in the library during exam time, which of course comes up at the end of the year, doesn't it? But at Bristol, it's reached ridiculous new levels. After years of expansion, and they're doing exactly the same at Bournemouth, they just keep building new lecture theatres, new halls, putting new things on, you know. After years of expansion, the university is so short of study space, because your daughter's extra, isn't she?
She is, in her final year.
That's right. That places are being offered to study on the SS Great Britain, which, of course, was the genius engineer Isambard Kingdom Brunel's famous boat. All I'm saying is I think the student thing is out of control, and I blame it all on Tony Blair, education, because you know what he wanted to do? He wanted to take numbers off the unemployment queues and put them into universities and call them students. Honest to God, because there was a huge unemployment problem in those days. Now, one more thing I want to talk to you about on this podcast, Leslie Ann, and it is a brilliant story. I saw Patty Boulay being interviewed on Breakfast Television just this morning, okay? And I didn't realise she's quite big, yeah?
Big in what sense?
In sense of as a pop star.
Oh, she was, yeah.
Right? She was. Okay, that's been a bit unkind.
Patty Boulay, I mean, she's a legend, isn't she? I wouldn't say that she's one of the kind of top-selling artists of the day.
Well, what was she a legend for then?
Well, she was fabulous. Very exotic, very glamorous, great voice.
Yeah, okay. The thing that really made me laugh, and I couldn't believe it,
was
that she'd only just come to this country from wherever she originates. The West Indies?
I don't know. I can't remember.
I think it was, yeah. And anyway, she was in London. She was staying with relatives. And she's on Euston Road because she wants to go to Madame Tussaud's. Because she's heard about it, and her ambition for years has been to go to Madame Tussaud's and look at all these fantastic waxwork models, you know. So she gets in the queue.
She probably met most of the real things over the years.
Well, but no, but then she was nothing. I mean, she literally was just a young girl. She was a teenager, 19 or 20.
Oh, this was in the beginning, right?
Right in the beginning, yeah. And she'd come to this country, staying relatives in this country, and didn't have any life plan or anything. So she's in this queue for about an hour and a half. She thinks, you know, how long she's been waiting, but she's not complaining. She doesn't want to get in. And then she goes through the door, and then she's summoned by somebody, told to get changed, get up on the stage and sing. She was actually in the queue for the X Factor, because apparently there is a theatre down on Euston Road where a lot of these auditions take place. And I've read about this before, about all these, you know, young girls who string along Euston Road.
Patti Boulay?
Yeah, yes.
I would have said she was too old for the X Factor.
Well, it was
the X Factor's only been around about 10 years, hasn't it?
I don't know, because I'm not a big fan of the X Factor.
Me neither.
But if it's not the X Factor,
enough,
it's something else. But I'm sure that she said the X Factor.
Right.
And all of a sudden she said, well, anyway, she used to sing a lot back in, I'm pretty sure it was the West Indies where she grew up, you know, because, of course, it got reggae there and calypso and all that kind of stuff. And she said, what do you want me to sing?
Your
and they
face.
Said, well, haven't you come with a prepared song? She said, oh, well, and she mentioned a few songs she liked, so the band struck up, she sang, and she was appointed after about 3 minutes with this great singing voice. I mean, that's
it. Sounds a bit of mythology to me. But
no, she actually told the story.
I'm sure she did, but yeah, it doesn't sound quite true to me. Well, anyway, no. I'll give her the benefit of the doubt.
Yeah.
I think she's rather more vintage than that, I would say. But yeah, it's a good story.
Well, maybe, what was the very first sort of
There was Pop Idol,
show,
wasn't there?
Pop Idol,
that?
Yeah, it could have been Pop Idol.
Or it could have been...
could have been Pop Idol, actually.
It could have been Open the Box, or... What was the one Huey Green did?
Yeah, that's right.
What was it
folks,
called?
Folks, I mean this
Opportunity
folks,
Knocks.
Opportunity Knocks, thank you, folks.
Maybe it was that.
The Open the Box, Box 13, was Michael Miles, wasn't
that's
it?
That's right, yeah.
Michael Miles says, Open the Box, Box 13. But I just thought it's such a great story, because...
Never mind if it isn't true.
Well, yeah, but... sometimes your life depends on one moment like that, the
yeah,
sliding doors thing.
Never let the truth get in the way of a good story.
Well, no, this she told it, so it's got to be true, and I think it's absolutely fantastic. I mean, sometimes I don't quite get it. I don't quite get why sometimes people are called comedians when I've never heard them say anything funny. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
I mean...
oh, there's loads of them. Don't get me started.
Well, I tell you where I'm going after our recording today. I'm going to see my great mate Tim Vine in pantomime, right?
Oh, no, you're not. Yes, sir.
Thank
yeah.
you very much.
It's behind
in,
you, Michael.
In the Fairfield Halls in Croydon,
oh,
okay?
Oh, he used to sing in there.
Where he's playing Buttons in Cinderella, okay? Mm-hmm. And Tim is a genuinely very funny guy. You know, I've done radio shows with him and he's come to some of my shows and, you know, which we've done at the O2 in Shepherd's Bush and all that. I'm going to see his. But, I mean, some people who are described as comedians who appear on, you know, some of these shows, they just don't ever say anything
funny. Not
funny.
Question, do you find Sarah Millican funny?
I don't even know who Sarah Millican is.
Well, she's that one that kind of slightly Geordie. She looks a bit mumsy, got blonde hair. She's very buxom, wears kind of dowdy
don't
stuff,
know her.
Cardigans who's, and all that, but she's really filthy.
Who's the one with the glasses? Who?
That's her.
No. This is a rather thin girl who pipes up all the time about Piers Morgan. She makes jokes about Piers all the time, and she's supposed to be terribly funny. Is her name Sue somebody or something like that?
No, I don't
know. I know, she's supposed to be Pike, Susan?
Don't know.
Anyway.
Who's that John one from Liverpool?
John Bishop is
no,
very
I
funny.
Don't like him at all.
Oh, I like John Bishop.
No.
He's clean, he doesn't use any bad language, it's almost family.
He's a droner.
He
puts me
Michael
to sleep.
Michael McIntyre, right?
Yeah, I've always loved him, but I've kind of... I've got bored with him now, the same as I've got bored with Miranda.
Miranda, yeah, I never
not finding her that funny anymore.
But I just, it must be me. And do you know what? It must be burning hatred within me that I've never been discovered to be funny. You know,
you wouldn't
what I mean?
Want to be a comedian, would you?
Oh yeah, I wouldn't mind.
Oh,
but it's a very hard job standing up on a stage on your own.
And they're all screwed up freaks.
Well,
these people.
You say that, but anyway.
And mostly depressed. Look at Spike Milligan.
Yeah, well, funny enough, I was reading about Spike Milligan this week, and he. He died almost a pauper because he never got it right with the, you know, the contracts, the deals and all that, writing the Goon Show and all that kind of stuff. And funnily enough, you talked about Peter Sellers dying, and Roger Tavern and I were outside the Middlesex Hotel before we went in and posed as doctors.
Hospital, even.
What did I say? Hotel. Hospital. Yeah, that's
same
right.
Thing.
Yeah, hospital. Spike Milligan came out, and Peter Sellers was hours from death. He was in a coma. And Spike Milligan came out and never got around him. You know, hi, Spike. You know, oh, yeah, I'm fine, yeah. So you've been up to see your friend Peter? Yes. How is he? Fantastic. Sorry? Oh, yeah, he's absolutely no problem at all. So what do you mean? We were told he's in a coma and, you know, he's had a brain hemorrhage and heart attack and... No. What are you talking about? Just have a chat with him. He's fine. He literally... And he wasn't even being funny or winding us up. He genuinely thought he'd had a conversation with Peter Sellers. So for about 4 hours, right... The story had turned round. Peter Sellers had made this miraculous recovery.
And you believed him?
Yes, and this had been, you know, dictated to the world by old Spike Milligan. Thank God there's not sort of live TV and live radio.
But that reminds
then,
me so much.
Like there was now, because about five hours later...
He was dead.
You're in the pub, you know, and you're getting on with life, having a few drinks, written a great story about Peter Sellers. Your news desk rings and say, "Are you effing stupid?" You know, so what's the problem? You know,
he's died.
You sent me this story saying that, you know, Peter Sellers sitting up in bed, getting better, miracle recovery. I said, yeah, that's all true. He said, no, he's not. He's just, you're absolutely right. He's
snuffed
dead.
It.
Dead. Just gone. And that happened like, you know, 10 minutes before deadline.
But that reminds me so much of when Freddie Mercury was ill.
Right.
And the rest of the band was going around saying, no, he's fine. He's absolutely fine. Yeah. He's going to be out of hospital in a couple of weeks. And meanwhile, he was in his house dying.
Yeah,
and everybody was lying about it. Yeah. Everybody was lying about it.
I had a reporter outside that house on the night he died. And somebody heard a bone crack. One of his bones cracked because he fell out of bed or something. You know, I mean,
it's a huge house.
He was terribly thin at the end.
It's a huge house, and his bedroom was right in the top of the house with a glass dome over it.
I'm not saying a reporter outside heard a bone crack. Somebody inside the building said the moment we knew something had happened was they were sitting outside his room.
Oh,
or something.
I see. I thought you meant somebody heard it out on the street.
No, but anyway.
Slight exaggeration.
Anyway, Leslie Ann, thank you very much indeed for bringing
pleasure.
Glamour and panache to the show again. Folks, you've been listening to Life on Planet Porky. I'm the Porkmeister. Get hold of us, please. We'd love to hear back from you on planetporkypod@gmail.com. That's right, isn't it?
Something like that.
Planetporkypod@gmail.com. And if you can't find it there, just mess around with the .com bit and you'll find it.
Twitter. Twitter's always good.
Twitter. What's your Twitter handle, Leslie?
@LAJWriter.
@LAJWriter. Mine is @MikeParry8. Look forward to hearing from you. Thank you, folks. We'll be back with you very soon. I mean, at 61, is she looking for a lifetime partner?
She may be.
Or
she might
looking,
be lonely.
I mean, she could wander into the Beverly Hills Hotel, cocktail bar, obviously, Sharon Stone, meet an Iranian billionaire or a Lebanese
she
billionaire.
She doesn't want a Lebanese
who's
billionaire.
Who's over here on business.
She wants...
Who could give her a great time, even though she's
that's
obviously not,
what not
short of a few bob herself, you know.
And also, and, guys of that kind of age group with all that kind of money don't want a woman in her 60s. They want somebody 25. Look at Don McLean.
Here's a picture of her in her 60s. She looks like a woman in her 40s.
Okay, she does.
She's Sharon Stone.
But that's a picture and that's airbrushed.
Yeah.
And, you know, Sharon Stone in the flesh.
I wouldn't deny her garage space to, you know,
what, you'd go out
polite
with
about it.
Well, there you go. Look, join the website.
Yes, I would.
Sign up to the website.
Yeah,
make
yeah.
contact with her
yeah.
and see how it goes.
Of course, it took longer
because
I had to put the blue bins back and get the black bins out. For the
Michael, this is bad for you. You shouldn't be doing this kind of stuff.
Well, you know, it's...
Especially not in your condition.
Well, you know, the condition, I don't want to talk about it. I don't talk about my heart very much. There is a battle there to be fought. You're absolutely right. There's a battle there to be fought. But, you know, I don't like talking about it. The 18-year-old young lady, who's a Canadian, so she's come from Canada...